From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. No propaganda, no lies, and definitely no BS. You're with George Eliason, live from Donbas, Ukraine, on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hey, welcome to the show. We've got a lot going on today. A little bit later on at 20 past, Professor Peter Morici is coming back, and we're going to talk a little bit about Antifa and about arming Ukraine. Dede Denslow will be on. We'll be talking about a new segment in about 10 minutes. But first, let's talk about what's big in the news right now, which is still the tanks coming into Ukraine. And little Z is really, really grateful Germany's doing this. Now, why specifically Germany? Well, they are Leopard tanks, but other countries were willing to do it if Germany gave them permission to send the tanks. It is important historically for Ukraine to get these tanks from Germany. Now, it does have historical precedent. The last time the Ukrainians had tanks and they were going to fight Moscow, they got them from Germany too. As a matter of fact, the absolute last year they were begging Germany for weapons was in 1945. The leader of the OUN that became a RADA member in Germany built up the Maidan politics for 2014, Slava Stetsko, was in Germany in 1945 begging Adolf Hitler for money and weapons, including tanks. And from 2014 onward, Ukraine has been using dates that were important to that World War II conflict as dates of attack across Ukraine, Eastern Ukraine. Every date that commemorated the victory over Nazis was a date that these volunteer groups in Pravi sector, like Azov Battalion, attacked entire cities and attacked unarmed civilians. So this has been an ongoing thing this entire time. The whole World War II construct wasn't brought in by Russia. It was actually Ukraine reliving every defeat and turning it into victory for their history books. Now, these tanks, what are they going to do? Well, they'll make great paperweights. Honest to God, they will make super paperweights. The problem with these tanks is, A, they're advanced. B, they don't use autoloaders for the most part. C, they don't have trained Ukrainian mechanics for them. They don't have logistics set up for them. And they're heavy, which does not do well in the Ukrainian mud pie. And let me assure you, Ukraine today at January 25th, 2023, other than a thin layer of frost, is a mud pie, especially under a 100-ton track vehicle trying to maneuver. It'll get buried very, very fast. The Abrams tank is actually worse in these conditions. It can't handle them. It's not made for them. So all these tanks that they send, which actually aren't that many, are they? Are meaningless. It's all it is adding insult to injury already. Now, is there any other high point to sending these weapons? Well, the fact that Zelensky demanded them and they were delivered, they're being delivered, they will be delivered. You take the Patriot missile, we've already discussed it. You have a point defense weapon that, okay, let's say you send 16 of them. Well, you need four of them to cover 1 point. All right, so you can cover 4 points. What good does that do you in a war? Zilch, zero, nada, absolutely nothing. High maintenance of these weapons, the long training cycle to learn how to use them, master them. Honestly, in the intervening months, the developments of the war preclude even bothering to ship them. And that's the way that stands right now. Now, in the meantime, and this is a serious development, Russia is sailing a frigate into the Atlantic with hypersonic missiles. Now, these Zircon hypersonic missiles are long-range weapons that travel more than 5 times the speed of sound. Now, this is obviously a message. And quite frankly, it's a reaction to these escalations. You want to send Abrams tanks here? Okay. Well, we're just going to park this ship out here. What do you think of that? How's that sound? What NATO and the Biden administration are doing is we're escalating up to a Cuban missile crisis again. And, you know, quite frankly, what the hell is wrong with these people? We didn't have any business being involved in this in the first place. Ukraine started it. If a NATO member had been in place when this started, a couple of countries may have called for an Article 5 conference. Yeah, you bet. But then they would have been voted down because the country started the war. And that's just the reality. So here we are, almost a year into the conflict. And a year ago, I wrote an article about why this conflict was going to start. And I gave the very specific reasons, the very specific steps that Volodymyr Zelensky had taken to get this thing rolling. And unfortunately, here we are. I also gave the fallout, predicted the economic crisis and the energy crisis along with it, and all the fallout along with that, crashed economies, lost jobs. Now, the thing is getting through this and back to some degree of normalcy. Now, we're going to take a break in a minute, and we're going to come back with TNT producer and host Edie Denslow. But if you've missed your favorite TNT radio show or interview, simply listen back when you want, wherever you want. Just visit episodes on the TNT radio website. We're also on all the major podcast platforms, including Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, Podbean, iHeart, and TuneIn. Now, there's no reason to miss out on anything on TNT radio.
Headlines as they happen.
Every day, something new.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We're back with Didi Denslow. Didi, how are you today?
I'm very well. George, how are you, mate?
Pretty good. Pretty good. What do we have going on in the news? Now, you mentioned something about Britain.
Yeah. It's the biggest story. It seems to be growing and growing as it really sort of filters into our centres of power, into Parliament. British MPs, plural, call for probe into massive spike in deaths. Nearly 3,000 more Britons are dying on average per week, and it's not COVID-19 that's responsible. Troubled by national statistics showing 20% plus, it's almost 30% at the moment, excess deaths per week. UK MPs have demanded an investigation. Unlike the last time excess deaths reached such levels during the COVID-19 wave, few of these deaths could be attributed to the virus. Speaking before the House of Commons on Tuesday, yesterday, Conservative MP Esther Esther McVeigh, skewered Chief Medical Officer Chris Whitty, a man who never blinks, for blaming the spike in non-COVID excess death on patients not getting statins or blood pressure medicines during the pandemic, pointing out that monthly figures for statin prescriptions had remained constant. So our Chief Medical Officer actually came out and lied recently as a possible cause for the excess deaths. Excuse me. Where is the evidence? And if there isn't one, what is causing these excess deaths? Esther McVeigh asked. Commit to an urgent and thorough investigation of the matter. Labour Shadow Public Health Minister Andrew Gwynne described Health Secretary Steve Barclay as part man, part ostrich over his refusal to confront the issue, accusing PM Rishi Sunak's government of denial and buck passing. There were 50,000 more deaths than we would have otherwise expected in 2022, the House of Commons was told, excluding the pandemic, which and it was only for a 1 month or 2 month period where we had excess deaths in 2020. This figure of 50,000 extra deaths is the worst figure since 1951. And George, the statistics at the moment for the first 3 weeks of January is that 7,000 additional people have died compared to the 5-year average, excluding the pandemic. During the pandemic, we were locked down for a lot less. And the answer that we're getting from Parliament is, oh, this is happening everywhere. Oh, this could be the flu. Oh, it could be COVID. They are blaming absolutely everything on the excess deaths, apart from one thing, the elephant in the room, and that is the vaccination program. So this story potentially is about to really blow up in the UK, and it's not just the UK who's experiencing these excess deaths. We see the same sort of figures in terms of percentages across mainland Europe, about 35%. The US, in some age categories in the US, is as high as 40%. These numbers, same as Australia, these numbers are really, really troubling. They don't seem to be going away, and nobody is willing to talk about it in the mainstream, George.
Well, we've had a Pfizer rep on, and he actually openly admitted that COVID was just the flu. There was nothing ever anything special about this deal. And so all the hoopla was generated. Now, in terms of the vaccines and such, we've also had Steve Kershaw. And I mean, it's appalling that, you know, like the U.S. and the world were relying on Israel to do the study on whether or not the vaccines did damage, and they lied about it. They outright lied about it, you know, because they actually recorded it independently and then hid the results. Now, Where do you think we can go from here? I mean, you know, is everybody going to sue the governments into oblivion? I mean, you can't sue the manufacturers because of the way the contracts are written. How do you think this pans out?
Well, I believe potentially, and I've said this many times, and I talk about this story every day. I think it's so important. I believe that this issue may bring down our governments. And if that happens, that might be intentional. That's me with my tinfoil hat on. But with regards to Big Pharma, I believe that they've committed fraud, and therefore that invalidates their contracts. That's a personal opinion. I've not been able to review a Pfizer contract, for example, because that's commercially sensitive information and the public aren't privy to having a look at these contracts. But the fact that they never tested the vaccine on transmission, which was admitted by a Pfizer official in EU Parliament, suggests to me that they didn't. That was just code for they didn't test the vaccine at all. And if that's the case, the whole safe and effective narrative is false. And we know that anyway, just from the evidence. But the fact that they have admitted to it in an official setting like EU Parliament I believe that invalidates the contracts that our government signed and paid for with public money, and that leaves open a door for Big Pharma to be challenged legally for what they have done.
Well, honestly, I'd hope so. Somebody needs to answer for all this. And, you know, I can see government officials being fooled. You know, back when it first broke out, we have a health emergency now. Millions of people are going to die if we don't do something. So the pressure's there to act. But after all this time, not going back on it and looking at what exactly happened with it, that's really, you know, that's not even a real gray area at that point. Even if your intentions were good, here's the results. You were lied to. Why not say you were lied to?
I don't know. It's so weird, George. The whole last 3 years has been so weird. And, you know, the crazies like me have been warning, and like you and the other crazy people who work for TNT have been warning that this is going to be an outcome, that these vaccines would be dangerous and they were going to cause harm. We are now there, and that appears to be true. It's very difficult to nail that down as a fact because nobody is willing to investigate it or talk about it. And it's only now that pressure through social media, through protests, etc., in the UK, backed up by these statistics of excess deaths that there's been no explanation for, no investigation into, is putting political pressure on the people at our seats of power, and only now are they starting to speak out. So I think the cat might finally be out of the bag, and if that's the case, they won't be able to put it back in, and we could be in for hell of a ride in 2023 on this particular issue, George.
Darren, thank you for bringing the story, and, you know, because it is important and we need to stay up to date on it. So, you know, thanks.
My pleasure, George.
Let me know when there's any updates. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to have Professor Peter Morici of the Robert H. Smith School of Business at the University of Maryland. We'll see you in a few minutes.
TNT Radio's Bruce DeTorres.
World peace and economic justice.
It's over. Yeah. The idea that they have the power they used to have, and that they can pick it up now with King Charles' coronation on May 6th,
right,
is actually what they hope everybody will think is happening, but it isn't happening.
Your assertion and conviction and certainty about that inspires me to no end, because anyone who studies reality, as you and I do, could fairly conclude you can't fight City Hall. These are juggernauts of enslavement, digitally and otherwise. Set us straight about our hope and potential, Liz Deer.
My feeling about what's happening now is in the basic understanding that everything has a beginning, middle, and end. So for my purposes, I have described it as the end of the imperial stage of human existence. We have been there, done that, we got through it, and now we're ready to move on. And it's what's difficult, though, is that there's a lot of the old power structures still have a lot of power to keep the illusion going that they're still in control, but they're not.
Bruce DeTorres on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
I view Al Sharpton as a poverty pimp.
Terrorism from white supremacy is the most lethal threat to the homeland.
I walk outside every day in fear of white supremacy right here in the middle of the hood. Okay, yeah, right.
My grandparents had a cross burned on their property. We were slaves in the past. We're free now.
I never seen a white supremacist in my life. Never, and they can't point to one. Where the hell are they? I wish somebody would introduce me to a white supremacist. I would like to talk to them and take pictures with them, because I never seen one in my life.
Biden says that the country is systematically racist. You know, I almost want to look at him and say, haven't you been the system for the last 50 years?
He's the one that sponsored the 1994 crime bill, which unequivocally basically targeted black men in black neighborhoods.
The polarization, be left versus right, the black versus white.
Pro-choice against pro-life.
I work for Black Lives Matter. I'm sorry that I scared you.
People have had to make it like they're apologizing for their whiteness.
And could you just please apologize for, you know, for your white privilege?
What's more disheartening to me is that those who are within the black community are allowing for that to take place.
So really what we're dealing with is a cultural Marxism that Joe Biden and all the rest from the left were trying to inculcate into our society.
Well, you were once the oppressor, so now I must be the oppressor. You don't avenge evil for evil.
It's okay to say disparaging things against white people. Our former president, Barack Obama, said it, you know, about old white men are a problem. Except when it comes time for him to fly around on their airplanes and ride around on their yachts or be their next door neighbors or endorse them for president like Joe Biden, then old white men are okay. This is their last gasp.
What do progressive socialists really want?
Watch Systematic Deception at SalemNow.com.
What kind of talk is this?
What the heck are you even talking about?
Freedom of speech, freedom of movement, freedom of choice, freedom of assembly, freedom of health. Our freedom.
The voice of freedom
is TNT Radio.
Welcome back. I'm George Eliason. Now, the ECHR, the European Court of Human Rights, just said cases brought by Ukraine and the Netherlands against Russia over human rights violations in the regions of Luhansk and Donetsk in Ukraine and the shooting down of flight MH17 were admissible. Among other things, the court found areas in eastern Ukraine in separatist hands were from 11 May 2014 up into at least 26 January 2022 under the jurisdiction of the Russian Federation, the court said in a ruling on Wednesday, which is really kind of weird. What happened after the 26th of January? They were no longer under Russian jurisdiction? Well, no. Here's the thing. Now, I've been in Donbass since 2012, and in real terms, neither Donetsk or Luhansk were under Russian jurisdiction until they voted to assent to the Russian Federation. It came with that referendum. Before that, Russia was helping out with humanitarian shipments, money, etc. They were bringing trainers into the area and military trainers, yes. And weapons were coming through to a degree. Most of it came out of the armories here, what they bought from the Ukrainian army, and what they took in battle, and that's just the way it is. Now, as far as MH17 goes, there unfortunately has never been a real investigation of it. Everything that has been done and said on the subject was done and said based on evidence presented by the SBU and Ukraine's Ministry of Information Policy, which was working. It got its start under SCL, Strategic Communications Laboratories, and we've been talking about that for a few days. Now, Professor Peter Morici is with us. He's ready. Peter, welcome. How are you?
Hi, good.
Oh, I'm glad you're here. We talked about starting with Antifa at the Cop City in Atlanta. You know, as a citizen, you know, you lived through 2020, and I mean, you remember what was it, 1991, when the Black Bloc violence really stepped up.
Say that again. What year?
I think it was 91. I'm not sure. It was the first time that this Antifa Black Bloc violence really stepped up.
But really 2020. I'm not as expert on that kind of timeline as you are, but it's been a while.
Okay.
It's been a while.
Yeah. All right. But we do have the 2020 and then we have this. Now, watching this develop, do you see this as really markedly different than what happened in 2020? because you have a criminal. He's Manuel Esteban Payez Terran, a long enough name on the guy, shot a Georgia State Patrol trooper. Okay, at the training facility called Cop City. So we have a criminal doing a criminal act, shooting a policeman. But do you see this development as being different than what happened, the violence and destruction of 2020?
Illegal acts are illegal acts. The question is, how does our government react? You know, also, to what extent can you link the Atlanta shooting to a group for which you can take retaliation? I mean, you can treat the shooter as a criminal, but to what extent can you do more? You know, that's a problem. And with this administration, there's no inclination to ever do anything. So, you know, I mean, you know, Iran shoots at American servicemen in Yemen and kills some and nothing happens. You know, Iranian surrogates. During the Trump administration, they sunk one of our drone boats, $1 million boat. You have to have an administration that is not afraid to use the tools that it has available to set limits. And we do. I mean, look at the trouble they just had with the tanks. I mean, and they continue to have with providing the Ukrainians with what they need.
Well, we can get into Ukraine. You'd rather talk about Ukraine directly instead of Antifa?
I think so, because that's more what I know about in a geopolitical sense. You know, that's really what I know about. You know, and other economic issues, but I can't say that I'm a Middle East terrorism specialist.
Okay. Well, I kind of actually, you know, the Middle East terrorism such kind of flows into my wheelhouse too. A lot of it actually flowed into Ukraine, which was unfortunate. Now, we're going to discuss your article, Arming Ukraine with Offensive Weapons is Necessary to Defeat Russia and Deter China. Multilateralism with teeth in realistic economic cooperation among allies offer the best path forward. Now, the way you began the article was interesting because you began it with since World War II, and you offered the NATO, North Atlantic Treaty Organization, and the World Trade Organization as two means to balance people, countries' actions in the world. Would that be right?
I think that what I'm talking about is that we basically need to defeat the Russians. Okay, to be frank with you.
Well, okay, let's start there. Why do we need to defeat the Russians?
Well, because if we don't, they'll just come back at us again.
Hold on. When did they come at us?
Well, how many countries? They sliced off 10% of Finland in 1940. And they've gone into Georgia. They have gone into the Crimea. And my feeling is that if we let them take the Ukraine,
they didn't go into the Crimea. They were in Crimea. Here's the thing. Your understanding of the history of this, the Russians were in Crimea. They stayed in Crimea. They had a contract to be in Crimea. But the Crimean people themselves had a semi-autonomous republic. 91, they voted to leave Ukraine when the Soviet Union collapsed. And it was nationalist groups led by Dmitry Yarosh that told them, you do that, we'll kill you. And they backed down. 96, they did the same thing. 96, Yarosh said, you do this, we're going to kill you, and they backed down. The 2014 revolution of dignity, if you want to, you know, term it that way, came up. And OUNB took over Ukraine. And Crimea said, now we're leaving because Pravi Sekhar actually filled an entire train with militants and were on their way down. And they were only stopped because, well.
Anyway, I get you. I see your line of reasoning. When the Soviet Union broke up, the Ukraine was defined as including Crimea. And we signed a trilateral agreement with the Ukrainians when they gave up their nuclear weapons to respect its territorial integrity. That has been violated.
In what way? Now, I'm not being facetious about this.
The Russians have taken back on. The Ukraine.
Ukraine, actually, that day, the day that this part of the war started, Ukraine fired the first shots. Secondly, they were about to break the Minsk agreement massively. I mean, they had 170,000 troops
unmarked officials to set up border posts and so forth. Come on.
No, that wasn't there. It was actually the republics that had had this.
In any case, on this, we're going to disagree. If you want to apologize for Russian.
But, Peter.
If you want to apologize.
No, I'm not apologizing for Russian.
For what the Russians I'm do, not that, a con- that's great.
Wait. You have a good time. That's not the case at all. But what I do think that this will do is give a good discussion, because you're a smart guy. And quite frankly, I think, you know, you carry an argument well. And this is the kind of discussion people need to hear.
Well, I think you ought to write this down and publish it and see how well it flies. It is remarkable that no one among the NATO nations seems to buy this. Even, for example, the Canadians, who tend to be more pacifist than we are.
The Canadians essentially an OUNB member as a foreign minister there. And that's just the way it is in Canada.
Okay. Well, that's fine.
I'm not looking at it as, I'm not looking at it as an insult to her either.
Let's see them the Crimea. For the sake of argument, so we don't tie up the half hour on that. How would you view their incursions into the eastern provinces of the Ukraine? Do we need to expel them from there?
Okay, into the Ukrainians Donbass is what you're saying. Here's the problem.
Do we need to expel them? Do we need to push them back to the borders that existed at the time of the breakup of the Soviet Union? Yes or no, sir?
Are they going to fulfill the Minsk agreement? That's the only answer. See, okay, if they had done that, if they'd made a step on that at all.
And try to publish it. I strongly suggest you write this all down and try to publish it. Good.
But
my feeling is
agreed to the Minsk agreement.
To go back to your earlier point, what kind of weapons and all that? If the objective is to restore the borders that existed before February of 2022, we would have to give the Ukrainians the kind of offensive weapons that are necessary to strike inside of Russia, to disrupt their supply lines, and also, frankly, to create a little disruption inside Russian society in retaliation, for the civilian bombings that are happening in the Ukraine, the kidnapping of citizens and so forth. The kind of thing to...
It hasn't been kidnappings. It's another problem. But let's go to the borders for a second.
They show up and they put Ukrainians on trucks and take them into Russia. That is not kidnapping.
Actually, you're talking about Mariupol. They were moving refugees out of the city so it could be rebuilt. When Azov Battalion was taken out of Azovstal, they actually had to protect the members of Azov Battalion from the people in the city who wanted to beat them to death. Because of what Azov had done to them. If you look at it from a geopolitical perspective, this whole thing, we looked at borders. Obama brought up the borders in March 2014. And it was a very interesting point. And I wondered why. Why is he looking at the borders? Because Russia isn't here. I was in Donbass. Why is he bringing up the borders? In the north, of Ukraine, in the east of Ukraine, Ukraine had never done anything outside what was already there in Soviet times, administrative borders. The borders were crap. And the whole reason was, and this is according to Alexander Moidel, who's a Ukrainian nationalist. He teaches at Brown University. He's a historian, all right? He said that his thought at the time, and this is in the 90s, was because Ukraine either wanted a lot more money or they wanted it to keep it as a friction point with Russia. But even with Belarus, now we're talking before any of this happened, okay, early last year, that border with Belarus is set to move 50 miles either way.
Let me turn the borders this around. Aren't set. What should be our policy? Where do we want this to end with the Russians?
It's our policy shouldn't be with the Russians. It should be where do we want this to end with Ukraine?
I didn't ask you what it should be. I'm asking you what it should be. Where should the line be drawn?
It should be actually honoring international agreements that were ratified by the UN.
You're being vague. Tell me where the line should be drawn.
I just told you, international agreements.
The Ukrainian border should be moved to the west. Slices of the Ukraine that they have taken along the Black Sea should be ceded and so forth.
Ukraine had an autonomous region called Crimea.
So the Ukraine is a
myth.
They
voted with their feet.
Ukraine is a myth.
No, Ukraine isn't a myth. But unfortunately, the Ukrainian government treats it that way. Now, if you go back 100 years, the nationality of everybody across Ukraine was actually Russian because it was Russia.
Well, no, it was a different world there, but we're not talking about 100 years.
The thing is the politics that they're pushing in Kiev is the politics that killed these people's grandparents in World War II. And they're Ukrainians across the country. You have to disown your family and your family's history fighting the Nazis if you want to be a part of this country. And you have to celebrate what we celebrate. And see, this is the big problem. It was the problem that sparked this whole thing in Donbass. Donbass did not want to secede. In 2014, it was the last thing on anybody's mind. What they wanted was to say, hey, stop. Do we have representation there or not? You just overthrew a president that we elected. And yes, Donbass did elect him. Now, Yanukovych, honestly, Yanukovych no better than any of these people. He just did it in a different way. He's very, very blatant about it. Now, if they hadn't done this, Donbass wouldn't have felt they needed to vote with their feet. Because right away, you had these nationalist groups like Pravi Sector raiding armories in Lviv and across Ukraine and start moving over towards Donbass with tanks and talking about the great Bandera war coming to Donbass, and we're finally going to do these people in. Now think about any region in the United States where you live, mid-Atlantic. If, you know, the Northeast said, we're coming to the mid-Atlantic because you don't share our political beliefs, so we're going to destroy you.
Let me ask you
this.
Why do you suppose the polls and the Balkan states are so apoplectic about this?
Because they share the same nationalist views that Ukraine does. The reason, though, you look at the Baltic states, they were set by the Hungarian and German empires as buffer states. It was actually called, in their own language, Ukrainas, on the Russian border, separating the German and Austro-Hungarian Empire from the Russian Empire. They did everything they could not to mix cultures. Huh?
Why do you suppose the Poles are this way?
Well, they went to war with Russia over 200 years ago, lost their entire country. It was absorbed by the Habsburg Empire in Russia. And up until 1918, there was no Poland. It did not exist. Now, you had a group of nationalists under Pawlowski? Anyway, they wanted a Polish nation. Now, one of the Habsburg, it was Archduke William's father, his name slips my mind right now, wanted to make a new Grand Duchy in the Habsburg Empire. So his project was to create a new Poland. And that was why. That's why there is Poland at all. It would have been ended up being part of Germany and part of Russia had this project not started. His kid, Archduke Wilhelm, wanted to create four different Ukraines, four separate countries with separate politics, separate everything. Idealized, the Ukrainian politic that's in Kiev right now would have stayed inside the eastern edge of the Habsburg Empire. And then there would have been three other Ukrainian countries, all separate. Simon Petlura would be one, Kazakhia all the way to the east, and there would have been, I forget his name, but he would have been in Kiev. All right, so Kiev to Odessa, central Ukraine, eastern Kazakhia, and west Ukraine. Now,
so given all this,
which of those Ukraines is the real one?
So I guess NATO should NATO exist in the fashion that it does? Should NATO's objectives be what they are?
NATO was set to, it was supposed to actually cease, turn into a political organization after the Cold War ended, and the CSCE was supposed to take over, which would have made a lot more sense.
As we know it, Poland is a reality. The Baltic states are realities now. I don't think the folks.
Oh yeah, of course they are. Who's going to deny that?
It would stand up and vote to be absorbed by the Soviet by Russia. So what should be?
Now you made a point. It's a confusion of the Soviet Union and Russia. Did you know that Russia was a Russian?
This conversation.
It's not.
George,
it's actually,
I don't know why you're inviting me to be on today. I really don't. You want to get into the deep weeds of European history, knowing that I wasn't prepared for that kind of discussion. And it seems as though
that's where all this discussion goes to.
No.
Peter never.
That. And you knew that.
I wouldn't do.
This is radio, not a college assignment. I didn't have time to go to the library, friend.
My apologies for making you feel that way.
If we
take it into modern day, and I mean that too, Peter, if we take it into modern day, now, the reason, I went back to the Soviet Union is that Russia was a put-down minority. And from Stalin forward, it was Ukrainians running the Soviet Union. I mean, that's just the way it was. It moved everything into Ukraine, research, all the wealth, everything. So we can't say that Ukraine was put down in that sense. In terms of NATO and in terms of a Russian threat to Europe, Russia really has no interest in going to war with Europe. And, I think they've been pretty clear about that. And they're goose-stepping all around Ukraine right now with the weapons. And let's get to the tanks right away. And this will give you my view on it. We're going to send, a total of 30 tanks that are too heavy for the soil, and I'm telling you right now, I'm here. You run a tank, 100-ton tread, on this soil right now, right here, okay, and start maneuvering, you're going to be sunk up to your ass in about 20 minutes. That's really
well, you're arguing
a 100-ton machine in here.
Problem. You know why we're sending them, to get the Leopard tanks there.
They're no better. And the problem is you have the logistics line, the training regiment for that.
Gasoline, jet fuel to run those things.
And logistics. Not to mention the fact that the Ukraine is probably going to sell them to Africa anyway because they can't use them here. And that's been a big problem with... You know, it doesn't matter if you're good-hearted about it and really want to support Ukraine. Who's keeping track of where this money's going? Because about 35-40% of it isn't going into humanitarian aid or the war effort. You've got Americans on the front lines for Ukraine saying that they're loading weapons on trucks that are supposed to go to their positions for generals, and those weapons are disappearing. They're going somewhere.
And how are you supposed to be disappearing to?
Well, you've got the Africans saying Ukrainian weapons are going there. I've got shipping manifests that I've never published because I can't verify them. But these are missiles, missiles that Ukraine doesn't make. It's being shipped out of Odessa. So. Should the U.S. Congress and the U.S. government actually take a tally and demand, especially at the levels that these things, the money's going to Ukraine at, should they demand Ukraine give account for every penny? If Ukraine can't, what should happen?
Well, I don't know that you can verify what you're saying. I mean, it seems to me you're on top of information that doesn't make it into the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times.
No, it doesn't, and that's a problem. But it's making it out everywhere.
I'm having a little trouble with your thesis, given it's not
it's coming from the Ukrainians.
NATO's pretty united on this. I mean, the Germans might be pretty weak-kneed about what they're willing to send and do, but they're not weak-kneed in their assessment of the situation. When you consider the ties of Schultz's party to Russia and so forth.
It's not Schultz. It's not Schultz
trouble,
that's running the show.
The trouble asking myself is, why do so many people disagree with you?
Well, because they have political agendas that are contrary to actually what would be good for U.S. policy, especially domestic policy. Now, think about this. You say it's against Schultz. Well, it's the Green Party that's actually running things in Germany.
Oh, you think they are running this? Schultz is, that may be, they are pressuring him. Hold on. But Schultz is resisting it in terms of what he sends. But he's not resisting the notion that this is an illegal invasion. I mean, you're not getting that from me.
Well, if Ukraine was going to do what they described as a Croatian scenario.
And you're not getting that from him.
Hold on. If the Ukrainians were going to do what they described as a Croatian scenario, which is consider every single person, man, woman, and child in Donbass, a foreign invader in March 2021, and kill them wholesale, where would the U.S., NATO, and Germany stand with that? Because that's what they were doing. All Ukraine had to do to get its borders back was fulfill the Minsk agreement, to even take a step into it. And when Merkel and Holland said, oh, we only signed that to, give them time to build an army. And then from the spring of 2021, Zelensky pushed for war, pushed Biden to back him, pushed Europe to back him. No one would back him right away in early spring 2021. But he got it there. So who was pushing for war? Because Russia did not have the troops to do any type of invasion that you're talking about. They just weren't on the border.
You didn't answer my question. I asked you why Schultz taking the position he's taking. And you haven't given a satisfactory answer. I don't think you really can consider it domestic politics. The kind
you
of
have,
say is correct.
When you're looking at it, Schultz, you're looking at it. Go ahead.
All right. You're the host. I said, if you have the kind of...
Oh, no, Pete. Go ahead, please.
The shipping manifest and so forth. You can make this public. Why? That would be just exactly what Schultz wants right now, because he doesn't want to send the bloody tanks. So it would be great news for him to be able to say, you know, it would be great news for him to be able to say that they're basically stealing our aid and using it to feed their corrupt establishment. I mean, that would be exactly what Schultz would want right now.
Then all he needs to do is look at the headlines, because Zelensky's going around making a bunch of sacrificial lambs of people that are stealing the humanitarian aid.
The point is that he's not using this information in the manner you described, and if it's correct, I would surely expect that, given that he really doesn't want to do this. Why didn't he look at the headlines this week?
Because that's what's going on in Ukraine.
I guess my rhetorical question is more poignant or relevant to the situation. I don't think you've got the kind of case you're pretending you do to your listeners. I think you're cherry picking history, but I can't pick you apart, and you know that.
Actually,
you came
I'm not.
Into this discussion very well prepared with lots of European history and so forth, and you didn't forewarn me, and you know that European history.
Well, Peter, I apologize.
Peter,
I apologize for that. My thought on this is simple. You're a smart guy.
I debate with and, you on the Mundell-Fleming model and whether the interest rate moves with regard to the Fed.
Oh, exactly.
Exactly. And that's the game you're playing. You're sort of like
taking
the grandmaster of chess and saying, let's play football.
Well, actually, I am writing about the Ukraine,
but I'm operating under the supposition that the war
that's
is
That's not my, my intent at all.
Hold on.
The thing is, what I was actually trying to tie in, and it's not to challenge your knowledge of history and such, but there are points of it that play so...
is not as extensive as yours, which I readily acknowledge.
There are points of the history that play so much into today. What's happening today? What will happen tomorrow? What's going on? That it is relevant in not just to make a point, but, okay, consider this going forward. Now, you know, we'll say with corruption, Ukraine is the most corrupt country on the face of the planet. That's a given.
Well, there's lots why of competition there.
Don't.
Because they, I will why, see that they... The Ukrainians have problems with corruption.
But I'm not asking you to do that. Here's what I'm asking you to do.
By putting that out there, you're asking me to concede that it's the most corrupt place on the planet. That's a bit much.
That's a side point to this. Should Congress make an effort to look after where American dollars are going? And to justify.
Of course, we should always make an effort. Congress should make an effort even if the dollars are going to South Bend, Indiana. Well, that might not be the best example given who the Secretary of Transportation is, but Congress should always make an effort. And there is a problem here with given how poorly the Ukraine was run before the Russian invasion, but you must admit they're running the place a little bit more efficiently now. I mean, or they wouldn't be putting up quite the fight. Let me ask you something else. What do you think of the Russian tactics of going after the civilian infrastructure, bombing hospitals, killing children? Is that justified in terms of, does your arguments justify that, these disputes over the border, those kinds of atrocities? I mean, you've already denied that
actually,
Ukrainians, but there's a pretty interesting pretty interesting concept. Are you going to deny now that they've committed atrocities, that they killed children, bombed hospitals, nursery schools, and so forth? Think of who you're apologizing for.
Ukraine has been doing that in Donbass for 10 years.
Now, hold on a second. Is it justified that the Russians are doing it?
The Russians actually aren't.
This war, not the Ukrainians.
They sent
their troops across the frontier, not the Ukrainians. Is it justified when they get bogged down to decide, well, what we're going to do basically is decimate the domestic population and go after the civilians, the children, the old ladies?
That's the exact opposite. That's the exact opposite of what's going on here.
Oh, really?
And you don't have to take my word for it.
If Ukraine actually had
a free press.
You're asking me to deny everything I see in the papers, no matter what the source, no matter whether they're
exactly
from the left or the right.
There is no free press in Ukraine.
We both go there and look together, but I don't have those resources, do you?
Actually,
he has the resources to
find out.